thanks for downloading this podcast from RNIB Connect Radio.
Hey, you're listening to the Happy Hour podcast, a trimmed down version of our hour-long show. If you're enjoying the songs and would like to hear them in full, along with all the interviews, tips and chat, just catch the full show, plus some extra tracks that you might have missed on RNIB Connect Radio. We're on every Monday at 1 p.m, with a repeat Thursday at 6 p.m. and Sunday at 10 a.m, with new episodes every other week. But for now, enjoy the Happy Hour podcast. It's time for the latest Happy Hour, a mix of music and chat with a focus on sight loss, mental health and overall well-being. I'm your host, Holly Tuke, and once again, I'm joined by my co-host, Paulina.
Still here, so stick around. We have lots coming up after the score and Oh My Love.
Let me be your fire. We're 1,000 miles up and I'm about to get higher. Feel my heart beating out my chest. You're the only prayer I need to make me feel blessed. Singing.
You're listening to RNIB Connect Radio. It's the Happy Hour with your hosts, Holly and Paulina. As always, we're chatting happy body, happy mind and happy soul. Plus, we've got some great tracks, including a favourite of mine and Paulina's from a recent musical movie.
I can't wait for that one. And also on the show today, I'll be chatting with director of a charity that runs accessible breakdancing classes. Holly catches up with stand-up comedian and host of the Sounds of the Silver Screen show here on RNIB Connect Radio, Georgie Morrell. And we also have a very special demo for you today.
I recently came across a recommendation of Oak, a meditation and breathing exercise app. So I'll be taking a look at that. That's coming up after this 1986 classic by Bon Jovi. Oak is a free meditation and mindfulness app available on iOS. There's no sign-up required. Once you download the app, you can just get started straight away. It promises to help you decompress and live a more mindful life. Oak is suitable for anyone as there are both guided and unguided meditations. There's also a range of breathing and sleep exercises as well. Plus, it also tracks your progress. So let's explore the app.
Oak. Oak. Quick launch. Meditate session. Mindful. 10 minutes. Button.
When you open the app, it comes up with various meditations that you can choose from, but there are three tabs which are located at the bottom of the screen.
Tab bar. Selected. Home. Tab. Courses. Tab. Growth. Tab. 3 of 3.
I think the growth tab is really interesting, so let's explore this one.
Settings. Button.
At the top, there is a settings menu.
Settings. Close. Button. Reminders. Button.
One of my favourite features about Oak is that it actually gives you daily reminders. So it will remind you to take a moment to breathe or give you a daily meditation reminder.
Apple Health. Switch button. Off. Double tap to toggle setting.
You can also link it with Apple Health if you'd like to.
Restore purchases. Terms of service. Contact. Privacy. Acknowledgement. Id. Version. 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 Close. Settings. Close. Earn badge. Earn badge. Grasshopper. Next badge. 5 sessions. Adjustable.
At the very top of the growth tab is an option where you can set the duration for when you want to earn badges. In this case, it's set to 5 sessions. I think this is a really good incentive for you to keep up with the meditation. And as you go along, you earn rewards. So it just gives you that bit more motivation to actually do it if you're a bit like me and don't do it as often as you should. But let's go back to the main homepage.
Tab bar, home, tab. Quick launch. Meditate session. Mindful. 10 minutes. Button.
So at the very top, there's a quick mindfulness meditation. But let's see what other content there is.
Meditate. great for beginners and experts alike. Learn mindful and loving kindness meditation. Mindful, button. Loving kindness, button. Unguided, button. Breathe. Powerful breathing exercises to help you to relax and achieve a clear state of mind. Deep calm, button. Box, button. Awake, button. Sleep. Wind down and fall asleep with our nature sounds and guided courses. Relaxing sounds, button. Guided breath, button.
There's something for every part of the day, really. So I'm interested in doing some mindfulness. Let's have a look at a meditation.
Mindful, button. Duration, 10 minutes, button.
I think one of the really good things about Oak is that you can actually change the duration of the meditation. So this one is set to 10 minutes, but let's see what other durations there are.
10 minutes, 15 minutes, 20 minutes, 25 minutes, 30 minutes, cancel, button.
I'll stick with the 10 minute one for now.
New to meditation, duration, instructor, female, button.
There's also a choice of a male or a female instructor. When exploring Oak, one of the things that really interested me was how you could have background noises whilst meditating. This is something I've never come across in any other mindfulness and meditation apps before. So you can have the choice of relaxing sounds whilst you meditate if that helps you to get in the zone and relax.
Warm up, none. Background, none. Button, back, button. Sounds, selected, none. Cave water, clarity, elevate. Fireplace, rain. Roof rain, soft rain. Stream, Tibetan Om. Waterfall, white noise. Wood sauna, back, button. Background, new to med, mind, new, durate, instructor, female. Back, warm up, none. Begin meditation, button. Alert, background sound. You can choose a background sound like rain or white noise to play during your guided meditation.
Again, it's asking me if I would like a background noise. I'm going to leave that off for now.
Choose sound. Not now. Button. But close. Button.
You can begin by taking a seat. You can pick your favorite chair or just sit cross-legged on a cushion. Let's take a moment to release any unwanted tension. You can do this by rolling out your neck in a circular motion. Also, make sure to check for any tightness that might be hiding in your jaw or shoulders. And if you find any, just go ahead and release it, softening that area. Now that you're ready to settle in, find a starting position where you're sitting upright and alert, but without being too rigid. Your chest should be open and your shoulders relaxed. Go ahead and place your hands in a comfortable position. They can be folded in front of you or on your legs. Now close your eyes.
I think the background noise would be really good when you're solely focusing on the meditation. Now, one thing I did notice is that you can't close the meditation once you get started. It basically wants you to complete it. I think my favourite things about the app is that you can track your progress, it gives you daily reminders, and you can customise the meditation. It's simple to use, easy and intuitive. So that was a quick demonstration of Oak, a free and accessible mindfulness and meditation app.
We're hearing a lot of me on the show today.
I'm definitely not complaining, means there's less work for me to do, so I'm very happy.
Thanks, how rude.
So, speaking of the app you demoed, I've never heard of Oak, so you're usually the one that tries out all the apps out there. How would you rate it compared to, I guess, the more mainstream ones?
I'd say that it's definitely in my top three mindfulness and meditation apps, simply because it has some added features such as customizations, like choosing a duration of a meditation or breathing exercise. We all know that we have the intentions of doing some mindfulness or meditation, but then life gets in the way and we don't always do it, or at least I'm speaking from my personal experience. So being able to choose a time that's right for you, I think really helps.
Yeah, because you'll be able to squeeze it in during a lunch break, at work, if you're maybe feeling a little bit anxious or stressed, or even during maybe travel time if you take public transport. And I think there was one feature that I thought was really interesting, the fact that you can add background sounds, which I feel like can really help.
It helps you focus more on the exercise rather than getting distracted.
Yeah, because you had that problem before, didn't you?
I did. A few episodes ago, we actually included a breathing exercise, which had some really nice wave sounds in the background. But unfortunately, I had builders next door, so I couldn't enjoy those as much. But it did help me try to regain that focus during the meditation. And I think it's just kind of a little positive of having those sounds in the background. It can just help you stay calm and keep focused.
Yeah, so there you go. If you want to hear more demos like that one on the Happy Hour, just get in touch. I'm sure we can get Holly to check out any apps you want to find out more about. And we'll have a bit more of Holly coming up as she speaks with comedian Georgie Morrell, but that's after Katie Tunstall and Suddenly I See.
Georgie Morrell is a stand-up comedian, award-nominated actor, writer and host of Sounds of the Silver Screen here on RNIB Connect Radio. At the age of 3, Georgie was diagnosed with chronic arthritis. 1 year later, she developed glaucoma and cataracts in both eyes. In her late teens, she lost the sight in her left eye, and at the age of 21, she lost the sight in her right eye for around a year, before the wizards at Moorfields restored 90% of the vision in this eye. The self-proclaimed one-eyed legend joins me now. Hey, Georgie.
Hi, mate. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I can't complain, to be honest. Apart from the pandemic, I'm all right.
For anyone that hasn't heard you before, how did you get into comedy?
How did I get into comedy? It's actually quite a cute story. So I trained as an actor and I still act every now and again. And I finished drama school and obviously I had no work. I came out of it thinking I was going to be the next Helen Mirren or something, and that just didn't happen. And I did a couple of plays, just sort of fringy stuff. And I played two comedy roles, and I'd always secretly wanted to go into comedy. I never thought I could be a stand-up, probably because there weren't that many role models for, you know, one-eyed little Georgie growing up. But it was something I wanted to. And I had very funny brothers as well, so I learned to be funny because of them. And I was thinking about it with comedy. I did well in these plays. And I got chatting to a mate of mine, fellow actor Felix, and a very good friend of mine. And I said, I want to get into comedy, but I don't know which way to go about it. And then we happened to get chatting about my eyesight. And when I was 21, my right eye, my only seeing eye, I decided to go blind for a bit as well, which was inconvenient. And it was a period of not knowing if I was going to get any sight back at all. As you said, the wizards at Moorfields, they did some surgeries, put a few bits back together. And I got a fair bit of sight back in that eye. And it's been stabilized for the time being. And I told him that story. And he was like, you should tell people that. And apparently the way that I told it to him was quite amusing. And it just went from there. I wrote a show called A Poke in the Eye and developed it. Took it to Edinburgh Fringe, and I haven't looked back since.
Has humour played a part in the way you view your vision impairment?
Yes, it plays a part in every way that I view life. It's a survival technique. It's not like, I think people make the jump that you're visually impaired and therefore you're straight to having a sense of humour. It's all the little things that come with having a disability is actually when you need them. It's extraordinary what the body will do and it'll adapt to. You'll get a visual impairment or another disability and the body adapts and you find a way through. But it's a little thing. So it's the long hospital waits. It's the bumping into things. You have to have a sense of humour to get through those because that's the stuff that can grind you down. Also, if I've learned anything, and it's so cliche, is life is so short. I want to enjoy it as best I can, and having a giggle is the only way to do it.
When you lost your sight for a year, was humour something you clung on to, or was it something you pushed away?
That's a really good question. I pushed it away. I didn't handle what happened very well. I pushed everything away. I completely shut down because it was a total gray area. It took a while for the doctors to work out why the eye had done it. I have a history of uveitis and secondary glaucoma, and what the eye was doing wasn't quite tallying up with what those conditions do. So I went from one consultant to another. He had a look, we tried one thing and then another, and then in the end he said, we're just going to bite the bullet, do a bit of surgery and get in there, for want of a better phrase. And he made the right choice, but because I couldn't, you know, was I adapting to life with a more severe visual impairment, or was I going to get some of it back? We didn't know. So I just shut down until we knew what was happening. And that was months and months. I don't regret how I behave because it's too damn late for that, but you know, why bother regretting anything? But I didn't handle it the best way that I could. A sense of humor kicked in, I'd say, more when I was able to reflect on what had happened, and also a way to process the trauma of it and the trauma of when I was little as well. Because 3 years old, I was so tiny, and I didn't understand, you know, why I was having to have eye surgery and why I couldn't see as well.
Did humor help when you were growing up, all those hospital visits and just generally navigating life with a vision impairment?
It did in a way, because I've got two older brothers, and my mum and my dad, and they all have terrific senses of humour, especially my brothers. They have a great sense of fun. And if anyone has grown up with older brothers, they will torment you and they will make fun of you and they will tease you. And it really toughens you up, for one. But they were also just so funny. And that was how they dealt with it. My brothers were suddenly presented with this little sister who was in and out of hospital, my parents having to take me. And, you know, they thought, what do we do to cheer her up? You know, how do we make this better? And it's like, we can't fix it. So we will make her laugh. We will entertain her. And that sort of fed into me. And I sort of took that out into my life. And my mum's got a great sense of humor and my dad certainly does.
Do you use humor as a coping mechanism today?
Oh, yes. Yeah, absolutely. People have challenged me before that it isn't the healthiest way to approach things, but I will rebuke that and argue the case. I don't think it is the only way. I have been into therapy. I have taken it very, very seriously, my disability, for when humor wasn't actually quite enough. And I'm proud that I did that and it was the right decision. But humor will be with me, you know, every step of the way, because sometimes you don't have many options. Life's unfair. It's rubbish. We have certainly learned that in the last year. So sometimes you just have to find the funny in it. Or you cry. And I know what I'd rather do.
You're really open about your vision impairment and you don't take yourself too seriously. But have you ever found yourself clashing with members of the sight loss community because of differences in opinion or approaches to living life with sight loss?
Yeah, actually, I've clashed with people who are visually impaired and people who are not, as if there is a sort of one-way road to deal with it. That's why I think there is a disabled community and I'm glad for it. However, we are not all the same and we all have a very individual story. No two disabilities are the same, especially with visual impairment. You know, the sliding scale of visual impairment is huge. And that's something that I think everyone could be a bit better educated on to sort of help with a bit more empathy, really. Loads of people say that sense of humor is the way to do it and they take it all very seriously. And fine, if that works for them, if that helps them, you know, get through the bad days, go for it. And if I've learned as well, working in comedy, some people just don't have a sense of humor, Holly. It's just the way of it. And they can, you know, do whatever makes them feel good to manage. But I won't be dictated to by anybody of how I'll cope with my visual impairment.
Yeah, I think that's really important.
It's tough that 10 years ago, I wouldn't have been able to have said that. I've just been like, oh, okay, then maybe I should do and be this, or I should be this. No, it's something that's come with age.
Would you say that humour helps you when talking about your vision impairment to others or comes in useful during any awkward interactions?
Yeah, And I'm always quite careful of it as well. I make sure that if there is a sort of attention about visual impairment and discussing it, because I know some people do get a bit wary around it. They don't say the wrong thing. They don't do the wrong thing, which really people shouldn't worry about as much as they think. It's really not a huge problem. And I will just break the tension, but I'm always sort of careful. It's like, who am I breaking the tension for? Who am I trying to make feel better about this? Is it for me or is it for them? And so I always monitor those situations because I want to make people feel better, but not to the point, not when it's at my expense or it's a disservice to what I've been through and what many others have as well. So I find straight talking about it and being quite conversational is the best way as well, because it's an everyday norm for the likes of you and me, and other people should treat it that way too.
How do you find the balance between both of those things?
I tend to just sort of gauge the individual and why they're asking, why are we having this conversation about my visual impairment to begin with? Is it a genuine interest? Is it morbid curiosity? Because I'm afraid sometimes it is. Is it people sometimes are just interested and a bit nosy? And I don't mind that because I'm quite nosy as well. And also, I think something my mum always said to me, and she's quoted it from somebody else, is that knowledge is power. The more people know about a disability, the closer we can get to some better representation and equality, because the more they know about it and that I live a perfectly good life, then it's like, oh, I don't have to be, you know, vision impairments and disability. It's not something scary and horrible that we should ignore, because you can live with it and be absolutely fine.
Oh, I think that's such a positive thing to end on. And it's really nice to hear how you find the humour in your disability and that you don't have to take it too seriously. Georgie, it's been lovely to chat to you. Thank you so much for joining us on The Happy Hour.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you, Holly.
You're listening to RNIB Connect Radio. It's The Happy Hour with Paulina and Holly. I find it really interesting talking about humour when it comes to discussing sight loss, because it's something Georgie nailed it when she said not everyone has the same sense of humor. So for yourself, Holly, do you have any controversial opinions that you feel that a lot of people in the vision impaired community actually don't agree with you on?
That's a really interesting question. For me, I think it would be the use of colored canes. I think the vision impairment community is split on this. I love my purple cane, but I know some blind and visually impaired people don't get the hype around coloured canes and just prefer for the long cane to be white, which is completely understandable. It's one of those really controversial topics, and I am all for the coloured canes.
Do you think it's because maybe the white cane is more recognisable, so there's a concern that if you add a colour to it, the public might be, oh my god, I don't know what it is. What does it mean? It's purple.
Yeah, I would say so. I've never actually experienced that. People have always been aware of my cane and why I'm using it, but I think there is that idea that people might get confused and not know what it is or why I'm using a coloured cane.
If you're listening, let us know where you stand on the debate. Do you like your cane to be white? Do you want the simple one? Or do you love adding colours and bedazzling it? Just get in touch. Holly, you're on Twitter.
I am. My Twitter handle is Life of a Blind Girl, but without the I in girl.
Also have our RNIB Connect Radio Twitter. So it's at
RNIB Radio again.
At RNIB Radio every week. I'm so sorry. Thank you, Holly. So we still have lots more coming up on the show. We're going to have Georgie back for the motivational song of the week. We're also going to find out about accessible breakdancing classes. That's after John Cicada and Just Another Day.
You're listening to The Happy Hour on RNIB Connect Radio.
This is me.
That's This Is Me from The Greatest Showman.
Oh, beautiful. I love that song. Also, unlike me, it seems like you can sing. Did you have lessons?
No.
I don't know. I feel like a little birdie told me that you've had some lessons when it comes to music. Don't lie.
I used to play the flute, but I definitely am not a good singer.
Well, did you enjoy it? Why don't you don't play it anymore, I'm assuming.
No, I don't play it anymore, unfortunately. Yeah, I played it for like 10 years and it was a huge part of my life. So yeah, I loved it. But no, life just got in the way and I had to stop.
Aw, will you ever play for us on the happy hour?
Absolutely not.
Aw.
Or maybe, we'll see.
Okay, I'm going to try and break you down. If you want to hear Holly play the flute on the happy hour, our email is... What is our email, Holly? Can you say?
radio@rnib.org.uk. And why is Paulina throwing me under the bus so many times today?
Also, I'm so sorry. I'm not sure where my brain is. I can't remember anything today. But I do know one thing, and it's something coming up from me, Holly.
Yep, next up, we're going to be finding out about accessible dance classes.
From RNIB, the UK's leading sight loss charity. This is RNIB Connect Radio.
Staying active can be a great way to not only improve our health, but it's also great for our overall well-being. Now, this can apply to all manner of movement, from sport activities like swimming and exercise to some more creative engagements like dance. And on the happy hour today, I'm going to welcome Director of Charity Rational Arts, Vix Morali, and it's so nice to chat with you because your organization does some amazing things when it comes to, I guess, movements and looking after our well-being.
Yes, thank you for having us on the radio.
So can you just briefly explain what is Rational Arts? What was the driving force behind starting the organization?
Rational art is a culmination of a love for art and making it accessible to everybody. So I think art in this format, it alludes to urban art from our point of view. So that is dancing, beatboxing, street art, etc. So we saw a gap in people with disabilities or different abilities not being able to access art the same way. So our charity ethos was to try and make art accessible to everybody, and everybody should be able to enjoy art and get the benefits of art the same way. And that's why the charity was formed.
And I feel like often when we talk about art, or even when we talk about movement, we'll always discuss, I guess, the social benefits of it, or maybe the kind of health benefits of it. But there's also mental well-being that comes into play when we talk about activities like these.
I think just like exercise, you know, we have a huge amount of endorphin release when we do activities. You know, we have same kind of physical benefits, because doing dancing for an hour is actually very, very physically tiring. It should be classed as physical exercise, and it is classed as physical exercise. So, yeah, we have all of those benefits that go with normal exercise through art as well, but you also have that innate ability to enjoy yourself and have that happy feeling when you're doing something that you love. And dancing has that ability to do that to people. You know, whenever people see each other dancing on TV or on the streets, there's always a smile on people's faces. It is one of those things that has a huge reach with everybody of all ages, really.
And these days, art goes beyond just a visual, because when we think of maybe on that of dance, a lot of people would assume it's just a visual medium, but there's a lot more to it, isn't it? It's a perfect medium for someone who lives with sight loss.
That's right, absolutely perfect. And it's, you know, it's really trying to use the other senses, you know, dancing or art, you know, street art, hip hop. It's about feeling more than visual, and it's about how you feel in a moment of time, and you can express it in so many different ways. So just because you can't see something doesn't mean you can't feel it, and how you reflect your feelings into bodily movement is what art's all about. So it goes beyond that visual thing for me. It's about your other senses and how you can make them feel artistic movement, etc.
Yeah, and that's can offer you a medium, as you said, of expression, especially if you are going through vision loss. It might be gradual or it's something that happened recently. You want a way to express those feelings, to be able to, I guess, mentally handle what is happening in your life.
That is correct. And, you know, there's a lot of research around sight loss and emotional well-being and the implications that could have. And one of them is, you know, sight loss can lead to social isolation. And the other one is around depressive symptoms. It is something that's overlooked by a lot of people. But I think if you just consider those two things, socialization, it kind of takes away our ability to be independent. So I think it's important that we give people confidence. People have confidence themselves to carry on doing what they enjoy doing. And one of the things that I hear when I've spoken to patients in the past is around how they didn't want to go out to eat because they were worried about spilling things. And that comes from a cycle of isolation as well. So, and I'm not saying that art will solve all of it, but I think art will definitely give people some confidence around their body, their proprioception, that will help them manage day-to-day tasks and how, you know, help them carry on doing those things that they love to do.
Have you found when you do the classes and the workshops that it does help to improve that confidence and boost the confidence, but also maybe improve how those taking the classes feel?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, we've had such a positive response for the classes. And even though we initially did it via face to face, you know, we've been doing it via Zoom for a good over a year now, and we've been able to access people that we weren't able to access before, because, you know, not everybody is able to come to a class that's in terms of travel arrangement, etc. So now that we can just go to people where they are, and they're actually comfortable right away because they're in their home environment that they recognize, that we're actually able to get more out of them and give them life skills to help them manage that. An amazing story out of all of this, we've been working with a student who has got visual impairment for a good 4 or 5 months. And, you know, they've taken such an interest in dance and our charity. They actually applied to be a trustee and a director of the charity. And we've just taken them on, really. And they're going to start with us. So on the board of Rational Arts, we'll have a person that is classed as visually impaired, you know, giving their views and opinions on the things that the charity is doing. So we can really drive things forward as a charity. What we consistently do is reflect on what we've done and what's next. We look at the past and we learn from it, but we're always looking at what's next. And what's next for us as a charity was to embed some of those ethos around accessibility. And the best way we thought would do that by having people with disabilities on the board to give them a voice. So that rather than us thinking something will work, we can actually have somebody with lived experience saying, yes, that will work, no, that won't work. It's those things. And I think from us as a charity, it's really important that we continue to grow and don't ever settle for what we think is great, because we want to be better than great. So we just keep pushing ourselves as trustees to do that.
So what sort of classes and workshops do you offer currently?
So at the moment, we're carrying on doing our Zoom sessions, and luckily we were given some funding by National Lottery last year. So we're coming to the end of that cycle where we're offering Zoom sessions to provide injury prevention courses. We were able to reach quite a number of people through those sessions. And the biggest piece of work that we're doing around well-being at the moment is actually with schools in Derbyshire. So we're working with schools to look at well-being of children, because they've really had a tough year with being isolated from their friends, their family, etc. So we're working on doing art projects with them to drive well-being amongst the children. And we're hoping that this project is just a start for the school's project that we're hoping to really push forward in the next 4 or 5 years. But the initial results from the 4 schools that are piloting this within Derbyshire are amazing. And I think that's what our focus is. We've got the Zoom sessions, which is mainly focused on the adults and people with visual impairment to treat some injury prevention. And then we've got a specific well-being session with children from schools. And one of the schools is an SEN school, which means that we're making it accessible to all children rather than just focusing on children that are not disabled.
Do you think one of the, I guess, big things that came out of the pandemic was opening up a wider dialogue when it comes to discussing mental health?
I think we've all been socially isolated this year, and we've all had a little bit of a low mood and sometime during the year. And anybody that says otherwise, you know, I would be very surprised, because, you know, we're meant to have interaction with other human beings. And I think we're meant to have that kind of bond and feeling of meeting other people and being outside in the fresh air. All of those things that we took for granted, you know, were taken away from us, and people started to realize what that actually means for physical health, mental health, your general emotional well-being. As a result of that, people have started talking a lot more about their struggles and sharing stories. And this has helped remove some of the stigma around mental health. And, you know, and that's what we need to do, is just keep talking. I think we're on the right track, and there's a long way to go still, but we're definitely, is one of the positives I would take out, just that people are just more open about things and not stigmatizing mental health.
So for anyone who's listening to our conversation and would like to find out more, where should we go and how can we get in touch?
Yeah, if anybody wants to find a bit more about what we're doing as a charity, they can definitely go on to www.rationalarts.com, and you can see everything that we're doing to make art accessible for everybody. If you want to get in touch with us on social media platforms, you can get us at Rational Arts on literally any other platform. So just type in at Rational Arts on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and you'll be able to get hold of us, and also keep in touch with everything that we're doing.
Perfect. Charity Director at Rational Arts, Vic Morali, thank you for speaking on the Happy Hour.
Pleasure, guys. Thank you. Take care.
What you say?
Hit the road, Jack. And don't you come back no more, no more, no more, no more. Hit the road, Jack. And don't you come back no more.
Well.
Don't you come back no more.
What you said?
Don't you come back no more.
I didn't understand
you. Don't you come back no more.
You can't mean that.
You're listening to The Happy Hour on RNIB Connect Radio. And it's the end of the show, so that means it's time for our motivational song of the week. A track that's special to us, maybe it gives us some motivation when we need it, or it's associated with a special moment in our lives. This week's track is chosen by the one and only Georgie Morrell.
And if, like Georgie, you'd like to be featured on the Happy Hour and share your most meaningful song, just get in touch. You can drop us an email, and I have it written down this time, so I'm going to get it. It's radio@rnib.org.uk. You can message us on social media. We are RNIB Connect Radio on Facebook, and Holly on Twitter.
We're RNIB Radio, so get in touch. We'd love to hear from you. That's it for the show today. We'll be back with a brand new episode of The Happy Hour soon. But for now, let's hear Georgie's motivational song.
See you next time.
I'm Georgie Morrell, and a song that means a lot to me is Van Morrison's Brown Eyed Girl. It is a great motivational song. It's one that makes you want to dance. And also, as a little girl with eyes whose were a little bit different to everyone else's, my dad used to play it for me and make me feel a lot better about my brown eyes.
Hey, where did we go? Days when the rains came. Down in the hollow. Playing a new game.
Hey, you're listening to the Happy Hour podcast, a trimmed down version of our hour-long show. If you're enjoying the songs and would like to hear them in full, along with all the interviews, tips, and our chat, just catch the full show plus some extra tracks that you might have missed on RNIB Connect Radio. We're on every Monday at 1 p.m. with a repeat Thursday at 6 p.m. and Sunday at 10 a.m. And we have new episodes every other week. But for now, I hope you enjoyed the Happy Hour podcast, and we'll see you on the next episode.
For more downloads like these, visit rnibconnectradio.org.uk/podcasts.